it's time once again for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Residence 104.4 FM in London. Hey, the Stone Roses have a new track out. All for one. On for all. We're from Manchester, and we are the best rock and roll group ever to exist in the history of the world, and we got a new single out. Have you heard it?
How can I not have heard it? It's on the radio all the time.
Well, it's on BBC Radio 6. You know, that's the only thing that this country has done in the last 20 years that's worth anything is BBC Radio 6, of course. It's Now, who listened to the world premiere of Radiohead? They did all 9 or 10 tracks, you know, on the radio there. You know, I'd never really heard, you know, I didn't really know who Radiohead was from Zippy to Pinhead. And, but yeah, then I remembered that some of the music that they had there. But there are no Stone Roses, I can tell you that.
Well, I'm going to withhold comment until John Cooper Clarke's show tomorrow. He's the original. He's the original on Radio 6, even though Radio 6 is the number 2 radio station in the UK. Of course, number 1 is Residence 104.4 FM. And John Cooper Clarke, he's the man from Salford. He's going to tell us whether it's good or not.
Well, he plays a lot of 50s American doo-wop and things from the old rock and roll catalog, which I noticed, which is interesting. Then I think Iggy Pop's got a show there as well, which is pretty good. And the guy from
Jarvis.
Jarvis has got a show. The guy from Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders. He was sitting in to doing a show. Of course, that music was the Bad Seeds. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. They do the music for Peaky Blinders, which is a good show, talking about up in Birmingham, post-World War I. The Peaky Blinders were a gang that had little razors in their caps and blinded people and whatnot. It's a very atmospheric, brilliantly shot, lit, directed, written. I said that. Yeah, it's good. It's back on. That's nice. I'm glad to see some decent TV coming out of this place.
Well, you might not know it, but this is the Truth About Markets. Residence 104.4 FM. Max, of course, is talking about the entertainment industry, which is a giant market. It's a copyright. Industry.
What about that show in France now, Marseille, with Gérard Depardieu? I was reading a review of it. They're trying to get into this, you know, these TV shows in America on cable, like The Sopranos or House of Cards on Netflix. So the French decided, hey, we want to get in on this game. So Netflix got in and they produced this show Marseille with Gérard Depardieu, and you know, we saw the first episode. You know, it's as somebody said, it's so bad it's good. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's not up there with these other shows, but it's somewhat amusing, I guess.
Yeah, actually, I met that Lord Dobbs or whatever the dude is who's behind a House of Cards. He wrote the original book, which became a series on the BBC, and he dropped his name off the BBC one. Michael Dobbs, is that his name? Anyway, he's some lord or something like that. And he said to me, you know, that the Americans just do it way better. He would never work on a British television series. The Americans just know how to do this stuff. And that, indeed, is true.
Well, you know, the Americans have this technique of writing shows where it's a team of writers. And it's a technique in Los Angeles that's been developed over years. You know, I was in a club in Soho a couple of weeks ago with these lovies sitting around, and they were talking about writing a TV show and who they should hire. And, you know, you've got these weenies from, like, you know, the TOFF group of entitled nincompoops who sit around private clubs just trying to figure out who they should hire to write their TV show. And, you know, it gets all very messed up. And it shows in the end product. So, of course, the U.S. writers have to come in and shake things up. And we see this in the physical The physical, what do they call it? The phys ed market, or these new, like Barry's Bootcamp. This is an American company that's now sweeping London or these other places. And this whole new generation, this millennial British generation, they're putting down the booze and they're picking up athleticism, kind of like, so it's America 1985 here in Britain.
You know what I noticed? Actually, I worked in Hollywood and I worked in the film and television industry here. Well, I still kind of work in the television industry here. We have a news program, but writing fiction. And one thing about the UK, and I've also worked with French writers as well, but British writers, the problem with them is they all believe truly, deeply, honestly that they are the next Shakespeare. So they write something and they cannot abide by anybody touching it or messing with their words or disagreeing with their characters. I too was in a media club recently and I overheard this very lovey guy. He was older. He seemed like a well-known writer or something. And he had some TV series. He was looking to hire a producer. And this woman sat down and he said, "So what did you think of the script?" And she said, "Oh, I loved it." And there were just like, and she named two small points about what she would fix. And he's like, "Well, I think this meeting is over because there's nothing that needs to be changed and I'm not looking for any changes. Bye." And she was like, "Well, that's very rude of you." And he's like, "Well, what is there to talk about? Bye." I was like, in Hollywood, they grind that out of you. There's no sacred. There's like, okay, what's wrong? Let's fix it. Let's do something. I don't care. Change my words. Change this.
Well, yeah, it's that's the team writing approach, I guess, as you point out here, that gets back to the whole mentality here of the crabs in the bucket. If any crab tries to get out of the bucket, the other crabs pull it back into the bucket, and that's life in Britain. There's nobody can escape the bucket. And in the US, because it's huge, because there's millions of square miles that are empty, and because it's the biggest economy in the world, people escape the bucket. Nobody really cares. Elon Musk, he'll start three companies, Solar City, SpaceX, and Tesla, after he created PayPal.
And Hyperloop.
And Hyperloop, it's like there's just huge opportunity. No, there's no crab in the bucket that's going to be like, "Oh no, you didn't ask Lord Snootypuss about starting these companies." Ooh.
Well, speaking of England, the UK, in particular England. So this week we saw David Cameron, the Prime Minister, host an anti-corruption conference, an international anti-corruption conference. He apparently a lot of leaders chose not to attend, and two of the four of these sort of most corrupt nations decided to attend. Four nations did, and he decided to insult them. He was caught on open hot mic, saying, blasting Nigeria and Afghanistan. And of course, people then pointed out, well, we installed the government in Afghanistan. And we also, as the president, the new president of Nigeria, he's Buhari, he's well known for actually cracking down on corruption, a very hard line against it. And he countered to this diss of his nation by David Cameron, "Well, all our money, all the stolen, looted billions are here in London, so we're going to request it back. And I hope you're easy. You don't try to stop us from receiving it." Of course, London is very difficult to get your money back once it's been stolen and laundered here. The owner of the Independent, Lebedev, the father of the owner now, he discussed this recently, which is that when he was in the Duma in Russia, by law he had to put all his assets into a trust, and the people who ran the trust just looted it, took his money, and laundered it all through London, and he said it's just impossible to get it back.
Oh yeah. Well, there was a group shot with it was Cameron, it was the Queen. And there was a third monkey in the shot, and the Queen was caught on camera saying, like, the Chinese are very, very rude. And Simon Jenkins wrote a good piece in the Times saying, like, these three monkeys, these colonial clowns,
Burko,
you know, they've got no right, really, dissing these other countries when they oversee the biggest kleptocracy. There's now a bus tour in London where you can go around and visit and visit all the kleptocrats. You know, in Los Angeles, they have those star tours where you can visit, like, oh, there's George Clooney's house. Here, the stars are the kleptocrats. You know, you get on a bus and you drive around Mayfair or wherever and say, look, here's the oligarch from Zikistan who stole $50 trillion. Look, wow, here's another kleptocrat. You know, it's a kleptocratic petting zoo here in some parts of London. And, of course, the plebs are trying to make as much get by as they can, so they, you know, they organize kleptocrat bus tours. You know, it's, oh man, what was I going to, I had something on my thought.
Well, the crony capitalist thing that Simon Jenkins wrote, it was really interesting. So it was David Cameron standing with the Queen, standing with John Bercow, the Speaker, and they were ridiculing Nigeria, and yet here they have harbored trillions of dollars here.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that David Cameron is reminding me more and more of Gary Busey. You know, Gary Busey was like a fairly well-established actor, and then he fell off his motorcycle, and he had a little brain damage, and his face went all wonky, and he's crazy. But he still gets on TV and stuff, because he's made a career out of being a freak. So Cameron, after he had some kind of accident, I'm sure, that we haven't been told about, but he came out the other side of it. And he's got a little brain damage now. But people put him up there in the House of Commons and they talk to him and stuff. But as you would at a freak show, it's like, what freaky, silly thing are you going to say now, freak? Here, and they throw peanuts at him. But he goes on, and you know, he's aspiring to be the next Tony Blair. You know, Tony Blair's eyeball famously went stray. He went through his Gary Busey phase where the lies were so crushing to his conscious mind that is the nerve endings that connected his eyeball to his brain started to deteriorate, and his eyes wandering and wonky, and so then he goes into these countries and he loots them and he gets a big fat fee, and then that's the path that Cameron's on. So, and the economy, by the way, is they've just been revised down here in the UK. So the austerity measures were, as we've said on this show since they were first introduced, non-workable, won't work, it's a hoax, it's just wealth confiscation, it's more a class war. So now the verdict is in, the economy is shrinking, there is no growth, wages are terrible, GDP is collapsing. Mark Carney is the guy who gave the world the Canadian real estate bubble that's now popping all over and creating a massive economic dislocation. He's overseeing now another central bank bubble factory collapse here in the UK, and they're talking about negative interest rates that are coming to the UK. $7 trillion or more of the global sovereign bond market is now in negative interest rates. They're telling people that they're blaming people for not going deeper into debt, for the economy not showing more growth. So again, it's the Gary Busey effect. If you are brain damaged, they don't keep you off the BBC. They keep putting you on the BBC. And so people begin to question themselves. They're like, wait a minute. The state broadcaster just had a brain damaged prime minister on saying nonsense. Maybe I'm the problem. And then, of course, the pub is open and the drinks start flowing.
Well, you know, speaking of corruption, there were the Panama Papers. Remember, they were leaked from these were documents leaked from Mossack Fonseca in Panama. It's a law firm that dealt with offshore companies and created shell companies and all sorts of things like that. And the documents were released a few weeks ago to much fanfare, all the headlines, all the newspapers across the United Kingdom, all the news programs, Channel 4, BBC, everybody ran with Putin, Putin, Putin. But once the database was available, everybody saw that actually his name was not even mentioned in it. There were quite a few Russians with offshore companies via this Mossack Fonseca. But then once we moved past the Putin stuff, then woe and be, old, lo and behold, whoa as well, David Cameron's father was named in it. And then it emerged that David Cameron himself also benefited. And then the news just stopped. They stopped reporting on this. It was off the front pages. And what happened? Well, this past week, the guy or the woman who leaked these documents came forward with an anonymous letter pleading with the public, pleading with the press to continue covering it, and willing, and he, this person's willing to come forward if he gets whistleblower protection and release all the data, all the files to governments if he gets protection. But nobody seems to care or want to know, because it looks like almost the entirety of, even though it says Panama Papers, very few of the offshore companies are actually set up in Panama. It was just a law firm that is based in Panama. Most of the funds were set up in British entities, whether it's the British Virgin Islands or London. So most of it is connected to London, and tens of thousands of properties here in central London. Now, David Cameron this week also claimed that he's going to out all the owners of these properties. Whether, you know, it will just take the housing market starting to correct 2%, and he'll, like, shut the door again.
Oh, yeah, exactly right. You know, the house market, all the lending from other banks goes to the property market, not the small to medium enterprises, not to budding entrepreneurs. It all goes to property speculators. And they're going to bring in negative interest rates to keep the Ponzi scheme alive. And any kind of rhetoric coming out of anybody with a high office, even if they've got, you know, Gary Busey disease, they're going to shut them down pretty quick. And because it's going to collapse anyway, but they're not going to willfully collapse it. They're going to keep milking this Ponzi cow until it just exhausts itself and keels over from exhaustion. And then they'll blame foreign governments, of course. They'll blame migrants. They'll blame the Brexit talk. They'll blame, the Germans or something, you know.
The Germans are always a good one to blame. No, they'll blame the Russians. Yeah. They should blame the Germans every once in a while. Yeah. But, of course, we have entered into recession. The GDP numbers suggest that, and manufacturing has declined. I don't even know what you were manufacturing in the first place, but apparently it's declined.
I got those Rolls-Royce jet engines I keep referring to. They're the top of the cream of the crop. You know, they can manufacture stuff here and be world beaters if they only had some support from the population, the government, the media. They'd have more manufacturing jobs. But manufacturing, you see, people who work for a living, who value their money that they're making, they tend to save it. And so, therefore, if you're saving money in your bank account, the Bank of England considers you a competitive threat. They want that money to lend out to their kleptocratic friends. So they demonize you and they get rid of your job. If you're some millennial out there and you borrow £50,000 to go to school, and then you borrow another £50,000 to go shopping, and you're a debt slave and a serf and a pleb, oh, they like that. Oh, you're good. Yeah.
Well, I saw some sort of headline, and, you know, I've hit peak gross headline. I can't read them anymore. Yeah, sometimes I just, especially about somebody like Osborne, who doesn't really let us talk about him. But he was in the headlines because I saw, you know, here's a guy imposing austerity in just the worst way on some of the most truly vulnerable people on earth. And apparently he spent £40,000 of the taxpayers' money this year on fixing up his home. So he thinks it's your taxes are worth him fixing, you know, his home renovation is worth taxing you for. But somebody who needs help going to the toilet, well, that's absurd. That guy should just get up and get a job.
Oh, yeah. There's a headline, I think it was in the Daily News, a guy, poor fella, he's missing half his head, literally. You look at the photo, and half of his head is missing. I'm not sure exactly what the conditions were leading up to this, but he seems like a guy who's struggling with a very difficult situation, but he's nevertheless in fairly good cheer. But he's been told, like, you know, you don't have a disability. You've got to get a job, and you're cutting all your benefits. And meanwhile, you've got Osborne, as you say. But again, this proves my point, that because it's based on property speculation, that Osborne thinks he's going to spend some money to improve his property because he wants to flip it to make a quick buck because he gets a bigger loan because there's a huge Ponzi scheme. This is the religion. This is the cult. This is the mania that defines British people. If you go into any hipster joint in Shoreditch and you see people with purple hair, blue hair, pink hair, beards, those things in their ears, I don't even understand it. It looks like it's not an earring. They like make their earlobes really big and round, and they put like nuts and
it's like a little plate. It's actually, I think, that's originally African. You see African women in parts.
Right, well, I mean, the National Geographic, I remember the African women would put plates in their lips, and then they make their plates in the lips, and they grow their lips, and they're like 24 inches big. So it's some kind of thing where you put something in your earlobe and you turn it into a big round thing. So, but if you listen in on what everyone's talking about, it's property speculation. You know, I bought this flat, I flipped that flat, I got this loan. They're not talking about art or culture. It's not based on some cultural zeitgeist that's changing in any way. It's just, they're just remodeling their own dementia with fuchsia colored hair follicles and maiming of them, self-maiming of their of their organs under the guise of trying to hide the fact that they're just basically part of one huge property speculative bubble cult.
Well, yeah, and that's why if you talk about Shoreditch, there's Silicon Roundabout there, and of course George Osborne and Boris Johnson, like, Their hope is, like, if we call it Silicon Roundabout, it'll become like Silicon Valley in America. That's all we need to do is just change the name and put groovy-looking people there. But, you know, the thing that is missing is not only the world-class, highly funded by the U.S. military, so you have those Berkeley, you have Stanford up there. So you have these training facilities, you have these universities that are world class and getting huge amount of funding from the Department of Defense and the CIA to develop all sorts of technologies. On top of that, like you said, Elon Musk, I could never imagine that guy from a very young age wanting to get the deposit for a property. And that was his end goal in life, to flip a property. The guy, just nothing stops him. He keeps on coming up with new stuff. And it's not because, like, he's not like, all right, I got my property. Now I can flip it in 4 years and I'll make like £200,000 on that. And that's all I have to do. And then I flip another property. And if I could extract equity and buy some rental properties, and that's how I'll make my money. Like, it's so, everybody thinks like that in one place.
Yeah,
and
because
it's
the property market is essentially a rentier business.
Yeah.
It's not work. It's not hard work resulting in gain. It's, you want to become, in this country, the goal is to become either a civil servant or a rentier, lord, lording it over people and having buy-to-let flats. If you're an entrepreneur, you're actually considered de classe. People look down on you. You know how you're a scrounger because you want to start a multi-billion-dollar company when you could be a rentier toff. Weirdo, and the entire media supports this, and the prime minister and the chancellor embody this, and that's why somebody like Jeremy Corbyn, who's the head of the opposition, the Labour Party, is perceived to be such a threat, because he's actually just basically interested in being a civil servant. He just wants to be a guy who makes sure the government functions and does it basically its job in sorting out some of the conflicting interests of different parts of the political system, and it's not really that tough a job if you keep your the kleptocrats at bay. You can have a fairly significant impact on a functioning political system and economy, but of course that's a huge threat because. If he were to gain power, you could very easily pull the plug on this huge Ponzi scheme, which would be fantastic for the average worker in the UK. Their incomes would triple in real terms. In real terms, incomes would triple for the average person. But it would come out of the pockets of all these rentier tops that are just sucking equity out of the system, putting it who knows where, and draining equity at an incredible fast rate, and just causing not only ecological devastation, but a rising tide of social unrest.
And again, because most domestic income and banking funds and investor funds go into property, when you need to build assets like a Hinkley Power Plant or HS2, the government doesn't have any money here for that. There are no investors for that, so the government needs to go to China or France or Germany. But in the case of the Hinkley and HS2, they're going to China. And that was another thing that emerged this past week as well. Not only did David Cameron diss Nigeria and Afghanistan, but the Queen was caught in Mike dissing the Chinese. There was a state visit a few months ago, and she apparently called the Chinese very rude. And they were here, of course. It was a state visit because George Osborne is pushing them to give them some money for these various projects. So now it emerged that they called them rude, and I don't know if that means they're going to have better terms for their...
They're going to extract better terms, and that means it'll come out of the pocket with more austerity. So the Queen opens her fat mouth, and as a result, there's going to be more austerity to pay for the terms with these deals for the Chinese, because there's no organic manufacturing base in the country. They have to go and outsource it because they killed all the manufacturing jobs here. So her bleeding out and being a moron, and now results in we'll have to be more austerity to pay for the terms that are going to be changed with the Chinese, who are going to come back and say, well, either we're going to pull out, but we need more of this cash. And the government and Osborne will say, okay, no problem. We'll just impose more austerity. We're going to get more people missing half their heads back into the workforce. We're going to go into the hospitals, and we're going to find people that are, have their organs hanging out of their body, or their appendix, being zipped out of their belly button with some kind of non-event. You're going to put them back to work. And that's back to the workhouse, basically.
Well, yeah, so in the last minute here, not only did the manufacturing numbers collapse, but of course the current account deficit continues to widen. So it's one of the most remarkable, widest, normally this sort of current account deficit would result in Argentina-like bond defaults and stuff. But of course, we live in a NERP world with plenty of cash, too much cash. Everybody's chasing any sort of yield, so it keeps, bozo, ridiculous economies afloat all over the world, and including the UK. So despite that, your Ponzi scheme's going for another quarter at least. Mm-hmm. And I guess, Max, this is going to be the final moments in this episode of The Truth About Markets.
They're going to be playing in Madison Square Garden, I hear. Wow. So they're conquering America. It's the best band ever. So that'll be exciting, finally.
But for you, it would be best if they played a hockey game while singing.
The Stone Cold. Yeah, of course. Well, that's it for this. Marcus, bye, y'all.